Congratulations, first of all, to all of you and to all of us, in fact. And you know, it's about the victory in Brisbane, our second successive series win in Australia. There are many remarkable things there. And I know that there is much expectation that this episode of Cut the Clutter should be about this victory. So we will talk about this victory and this series. But really, to tell you the truth, there isn't that much clutter with this series. Why? One, because we've all watched it ball by ball. Second, we've listened to commentators who are experts, that is Harsha Bhogle, Sanjay Manjrekar, Shane Warne, such as he is the worst commentator in this series, if I may say so, and others. So I don't have expertise beyond them and I can't declutter anything. And you know that all of you are cricket coaches in India and all of you know more cricket than me. So I will make a mention of some highlights as I see them in this series, but in the second half of this Cut the Clutter. So stay on with me. The first half, or the major part of it, we are talking about a story that surfaced yesterday, and that takes us to the region or part of geography that we seem to like, and that is the Himalayas. So a story came up yesterday on NDTV by Vishnu Shom and on the print by Snehesh Alex Philip. This story had been brewing since last Friday, and the story was that some satellite pictures had come up from Planet Labs showing the Chinese having constructed a fairly fancy looking village somewhere along the LAC. And if you expanded those Google Maps and if you got the exact positions, they will show you that this village is located in an area India considers its own. In fact, about 4-4.5 kilometers inside of the line that Indian maps, official maps, see as India's border or India's line of actual control with China in the region of Central Arunachal Pradesh. And we'll explain to you what is Central Arunachal Pradesh as distinct from West and the East. So this story had been brewing, and the question was, have the Chinese walked in and occupied territory on the Indian side now? And if they have done so, then what was the Indian government, Modi government, Indian armed forces, they were all doing, particularly in these years of very heightened vigilance, particularly since 2017, since Doklam. Since then, our LAC has been active in every sector, that is Ladakh, Sikkim, Uttarakhand, Himachal and Arunachal Pradesh, for sure. So what happened in this case? Now, we were figuring this out and it was taking some research. The stories came out yesterday. Now, these are polarized times. So when something like this comes up, people will go by what they believe in and people will go by which side they are on. So people who are with Mr. Modi or Modi government, they will say, oh, this must have been land taken in the past, and what does Modi government have to do with it, right? People who don't like Mr. Modi will say, look at Mr. Modi, 56 inch, right? In spite of him and in spite of his boasts, Chinese have come in, they built a village in Indian territory, and nobody has questioned them and nobody is daring to question them. And if some of them are even more aggressive, they will say India should now throw the Chinese out. So we will do what we do in Cut the Clutter. That's why Cut the Clutter. We will give you the facts and literally lift the layers of decades of geography, of history, of geography, of geostrategy and politics to tell you what happened in that fascinating region, when, how, what's happening right now, what does it mean. So we will tell you, we'll share a couple of things with you, like the stuff that you might want to read to understand this. One is Snehesh Alex Phillips' story from the print that we published on Monday evening. Second is an article that we had carried in 2018, that's more than 2 years back, 2.5 years back in fact, from Colonel Vinayak Bhatt. Colonel Vinayak Bhatt, he writes with the Twitter handle Raj47. He spent his lifetime in the Army's intelligence department, and he was a satellite imagery expert who also specialized on China and knows the language. So he wrote a series of articles for us. Among those articles was this one in 2018, which gave you the pictures of exactly the place which is now looking like a constructed village. Until then, it was a large battalion level installation of the PLA Chinese Army. He also showed on those pictures that a new bridge had been built on a river that's called Sari Chu, T-S-A-R-I-C-H-U. It's a holy sacred Tibetan river. As you can imagine, in those parts, snow-fed, narrow, fast-flowing river. I don't know if any river rafting takes place there or not, but I think that place is much too hazardous for all that. Anyway, so the Chinese had built all that. In 2018, he did this story, and the story was headlined that in spite of the Xi Jinping, Narendra Modi bonhomie, the Chinese are doing this in Indian territory. And he has given you satellite coordinates to show that this was in territory that India considers its own. So there is no doubt about that. So what is the story now? To understand what is the story now, I'm sharing a third thing with you. And these are passages from a book called 1962 War, The Unknown Battles, Operations in Subansiri and Siang Frontier Divisions by Major Generals G.G. Dwivedi and P.J.S. Sandhu. Where did we find this? I found this on the USI, that is United Services Institution, which is a foremost think tank of Indian Armed Forces, on their website. So the book, once again, is 1962 War, The Unknown Battles, Operations in Subansiri and Siang Frontier Divisions by Major General G.G. Dwivedi and Major General P.J.S. Sandhu. Now, what are these two divisions? Now, look at the map of Arunachal, and we are showing you the map of Arunachal. Much of the fighting that took place in 1962 and the regions and places that stay imprinted in our memory, Tawang, Dirangzong, Sela, Bomdila, then coming down to foothills and then Tezpur in Assam. That is on the westernmost side of Arunachal Pradesh. In fact, to the west of that is Bhutan. That is where China has now made new claims in Bhutanese territory. Nevertheless, so most of the fighting took place there. Another area which might stick to our minds, particularly if we've been following that history, is an area called Walong. There was also a battle of Walong. Walong is, if you again look at this map of Arunachal Pradesh, Walong will be the extreme east of Arunachal Pradesh. So if extreme east, right? So that is, Walong falls in what is called as Lohit Frontier Division. Bomdila, Sela, Dirangzong, Tawang, all these fall in what was called as Kameng Frontier Division. Now, Kameng Frontier Division is now divided in two districts, or three districts in fact now, that is East Kameng, West Kameng and Tawang District. So, but that is the region. So, this was the Kameng Frontier Division. Now, in the middle, there were two more divisions, and that is the central sector. So, between this western sector and the eastern sector, where heaviest fighting took place, was the large sprawling central sector in this map, and you can see this very clearly. This central sector, its width is about 300 to 350 kilometers at various places. Its depth, that is from the line of actual control to say the plains on the Assam side or the Brahmaputra River, would be about 100 to 150 kilometers at various places. But this is only as the crow flies. You cannot walk or you drive in those mountains like you might do on a highway, because these are rivers, valleys, mountains, and you can imagine what it was like 60 years back. So in this book, these two generals tell you about what happened in this sector, which is not talked about that much in our military history as well. That's why this book is called The Unknown Battles of 1962. Now, the most unknown battle of these of 1962 actually did not take place in 1962. It took place in 1959, and it took place in a place called Longju, L-O-N-G-J-U. In fact, if you want to read more about it, you have to Google Longju incident, and you will find some of the stuff that I'm telling you about also, and maybe some more. And if you do, please send it to me. I'll be happy to look at it. Now, Longju was among the first incidents, definitely the first incident on the eastern side of an armed clash between Chinese and Indian troops. Now, how did that happen? So once again, I rely on this book, but this is also well-established history. We have to remember some important dates. 10th March 1959. 10th March 1959 is when the Tibetan insurrection started against the Chinese, because Chinese had now come and occupied, once Mao took over, Chinese then occupied Xinjiang and Tibet. So Tibet had its first uprising. The uprising began on 10th of March. On 31st of March, the 14th Dalai Lama escaped from China with his key aides and some people. He escaped from China. He came into India and sought asylum. He came into India at Tawang. That's in western Arunachal Pradesh. But the region abutting that part of Arunachal Pradesh is called Shenan region of Tibet. It's also a fertile region. It has many valleys. It has many passages. That's also the region that gives somebody the easiest access into India through Arunachal Pradesh. So the Chinese understandably were very, very neurotic about this region, which they described as the hotbed of Tibetan reactionaries. In fact, that's the expression that the two generals have quoted in their book. And so they sent not one or two, but four infantry regiments of PLA to put down the Tibetan rebellion in this region, abutting Arunachal Pradesh. These regiments were 154, 155, 159, and 401, and kind of counter-insurgency operations. Now, when these were operating, they found that there were almost 28 passages that were going out of this region into Arunachal Pradesh. So Tibetans could escape to India and Arunachal Pradesh, or they could use parts of Arunachal Pradesh, then called NEFA, Northeastern Frontier Agency, as their staging posts, or carry out hit and run attacks and come back. And China made allegations that India was helping them, which at that point wasn't quite true. So the Chinese then started consolidating that area. So once again, if you go back to 1959-1962, then Arunachal was divided in Kameng Division on the west, Lohit Division on the east, Lohit Frontier Division, Kameng Frontier Division, this was the Northeast Frontier Agency, then the Siang and Subansiri Frontier Divisions in the center. Now remember, Kameng, Siang, Subansiri, Lohit, these are all rivers, and all these rivers are tributaries of the Brahmaputra. So each division was named after a river, because in mountains usually you will find that much that happens, from cultivation to habitation to transport to movement to frankly fighting, happens along the river valleys. So that is important to understand the geostrategy of Arunachal Pradesh. Now we have a visual understanding of the terrain and the region of Arunachal Pradesh. Then we go back to March of 1959. March 10, the rebellion starts. The Dalai Lama comes to India on March 31. Chinese discover that there are many routes from their Shenan division in Tibet coming into Arunachal Pradesh. So they start putting pressures on India, and they start also making allegations against India. On June 29, they give Government of India a protest note, and they say that your forces are occupying this position at a place called Migitun. Migitun is pretty much facing Longju, or you can say the same Longju Migitun area. Different countries, different ethnicities give different names to places. The Chinese have one set of names, Tibetans have one set of names. Very often on the Indian side, we have another set of names. For example, even the river Sari Chu that we keep talking about is called by the Chinese as Gelenbang. So these names are sometimes confusing. The Chinese said that you are holding this position, which is wrong. This is our territory. This was right on the border. This was called Longju. India obviously said that no such thing. We have no such occupation in your territory. Longju is in our territory. Now, this was in Subansiri Frontier Division. Now, India at that point was really not manning this frontier well, because this was seen as a completely faraway territory. In fact, Indian Army wasn't even there. Assam Rifles in small pockets was patrolling this entire region. It so happened at this place, which the Chinese now said that they were claiming Longju, there was a tiny Assam Rifles detachment, in fact a detachment of 9th Battalion of Assam Rifles, which is a paramilitary force, which is the BSF equivalent in the eastern sector. They were managing or protecting this post. They were sitting at this post. That was more like a show of flag. On 25th of August 1959, the Chinese strength, a company strength of troops, PLA troops, to attack this post. So they annihilated this post. Casualties suffered were not that many. Fortunately, only two Assam Rifles troops were killed and the rest were told to withdraw. So 1959, 25th of August, Chinese occupied this post. That post is where this village is located now. That's where their new battalion headquarter also is located now. So they took it in 1959. What happened then? 25th August, they took it over. India had no reinforcements, nothing. These Assam Rifles troops had a tough time trekking back to a place called Daporijo, which was far away. And between that, there is a place called Michuka, which now has a fairly sizable advanced landing ground of Indian Air Force. Not a fighter base, but advanced landing ground of Indian Air Force. So these troops came back. Two things happened after that. One, both countries decided that they will settle this diplomatically. In the process, on 29th of August, both sides agreed to withdraw their troops from Longju. Both withdrew. It so happened that after that, India never sent its troops back to Longju. In the course of time, that is in the next few months, the Chinese sent a full company strength of troops there who sat there, impossible to dislodge. And 62, when the war took place, the Chinese from here mounted larger scale attacks into India and came quite deep. In fact, if you see on the map, they occupied Michuka, which is now advanced landing ground of the Indian Air Force, has been so for a long time, and came beyond Michuka also. In fact, a battalion of the Indian Army then, that is 2x8 Gurkha rifles, this is where they got into trouble because they were withdrawing and they got lost. A lot of them died because of starvation. These included the commandant of the battalion, Lieutenant Colonel D.A. Taylor, also another officer, Major Dar, who along with his larger detachment was ambushed by the Chinese when they were withdrawing from Michuka to a place called Tato. You can see that on the map as well. Overall, in 1962 war, this book tells us in this very region, in the Michuka region, of the 13 officers, 18 JCOs and 826 other ranks, 8 officers, 4 JCOs and 150 other ranks were killed or taken prisoner. So a lot of fighting did take place in this central sector that we don't know about. Now what happened after the 62 war is the Chinese vacated everything they had occupied in 62 war, but they did not vacate Longju. Why? Because they said, we did not occupy it in 62 war. We just took it in 1959 because it was ours. Now, if you see the article by Vinayak Bhatt, he has a reference there for which I have not found other confirmations, but he must know well, he must be right. So I go by what he says. He said in 1960 December, the Chinese withdrew their detachment, last detachment from Longju, when an epidemic struck. This is 1960. And more than 100 Chinese died. So they left 100 Chinese bodies behind, or more than 100 bodies behind, and they withdrew. That is the time he writes in this article that Nehru wanted the army to go and reoccupy Longju. But the army at that point dissuaded him, saying that, look, we have no wherewithal to maintain a force of any credible size there. So let it be. So Longju has suffered from that let it be syndrome since then, and that is the story so far. Now, is this important for India? Certainly it's important for India. It's also important for Tibetan people because, as we said, this is a sacred river. It's also sacred because this river, along this river, is a circumambulation of Yulmet Gompa. Gompa means a monastery, which Buddhists of Tibet like to do once every 12 years. That is coinciding with the year of the monkey. That again is something that Colonel Vinayak Bhatt told us in that article. So this is a 45 kilometer circumambulation, but the Chinese now control it fully, and it is quite understandable why they were worried about this, because this is a route that the Tibetans knew well, and then they knew that Indian side is very wooded, so it's easy once you cross into the Indian side to hide there and to escape the Chinese counter-insurgency troops chasing them. So that is the history, geography, geostrategy, reality of this place. This is in what India considers its own territory, but this was not taken recently. This was taken in 1959. Since 1990, China has been improving its roads and infrastructure in the region. A company level post came up earlier in late 80s. It was then elevated to a battalion level post. Then a new bridge was built, permanent bridge was built on the Sarichu River. So what was on the eastern side of the river earlier also came on the western side, that is right next to India. So there was no river boundary left between Indian troops and Chinese troops. But this is also a consequence of the fact that until 1959, in fact till 62, there was a large region here where between India and Chinese forces there was almost a kind of no man's land. So that is the reality of this place. Should India evict the Chinese in the best of all worlds? Yes. Is India capable of evicting the Chinese from this place? Well, it depends on what India's priorities are. The mismatch in defense military capabilities between India and China is much too high right now. The focus right now is Ladakh, Doklam, Chumbi Valley. Those are areas of much greater strategic significance. So while it's good that this has come back to our attention, the fact is that this is not something, some place where Chinese have just walked in and taken our territory. The lesson to learn there is that India can no longer ignore its border development. And I had written an article almost a decade back when Dr. Manmohan Singh went to Arunachal Pradesh, and he reversed the old Nehru Verrier Alvin policy. Read that article, you will get some details of not changing too much Arunachal Pradesh, and he decided to build roads, highways, dams, power plants in Arunachal Pradesh. And unfortunately, that immediately ran into big trouble from our activists, including his activist environment minister at that point, Jairam Ramesh, and many others. And all those projects got stuck, very unfortunately. It is now that many of those are finding steam. Now, you might say at this point, environmental issues are being ignored far too much, which is also a reality. But I think that is the response that you always expect when excess of something takes place. Under UPA 2, there was excess of environmental activism, and the government was too weak to counter it, although Dr. Manmohan Singh saw the need to do this. So it's a good thing now that India is also building infrastructure in that area. So more important than evicting the Chinese from some place, a tiny place which they've had since 1959, since 62 years ago, it is important to now secure what India already has along the line of control and to make it more defensible. Now, because I had said, I had promised that I will come back to cricket, I am coming back to cricket, but not more than for a minute or two, because you know all about what's happened and you've been hearing and watching and reading experts. So a few highlights as I pick those up. Number one is the line that Tim Payne spoke to Ravichandran Ashwin in the previous test match in Sydney, when Ravichandran Ashwin and Hanuma Vihari were playing those great defensive innings to save that test. He said, come to Gabba now, head. Bad word. Normally I would not even speak this much, but you can fill in the blanks. So I'm not speaking out the full four letters of the first half of the word, but head. Come to Gabba head. I will see you. And Ashwin then said to him, I'm waiting for you to come to India. That will be your last series. So what happened? Ashwin was injured. He didn't play. He wasn't even needed to play. India went to Gabba, whatever Tim Payne may have called Ashwin. And India defeated Australia at the Gabba for the first time in 1988. And since 1988, for 32 years, Australia had not lost a match there. So think of the irony. Second important thing. that GABA is not just as the most impregnable fortress of Australian cricket. The highest score chasing to win in the fourth innings at the GABA was 236, and that was in 1951 by Australia, because this is a pitch that cracks up and become quite nasty by the fourth innings. India chased 329, and it looks like quite easily. Then with Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood, Lyon, and also Cameron as the reserve seamer, this was the toughest attack to play. Against this, India came out without some of its best batsmen, especially Virat Kohli. Initially, Rohit Sharma was injured, so he could not get a start in the series. And then Hanuma Vihari got injured. And then against the Australian batting lineup with Warner, Smith, both back, Labuschagne now doing very well, India essentially played not even with a second string attack, but in some cases by dipping into the bench strength even beyond the second string. So look at the Indian bowlers who were missing. Ishant Sharma, Bhuvneshwar Kumar, Mohammad Shami got injured during the series in the first test itself. Bumrah got injured by the third test. Umesh Yadav got injured, again hit on his hand in the first test. Sani got injured while playing in the fourth test. Ashwin got injured in the third test. Jadeja got injured in the third test, missing in the fourth test. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of India's frontline bowlers were missing, and yet India got those 20 wickets against Australia. Then the finds of the series are Gill, Pant, Washington Sundar, Siraj, Sani, Shardul, and Natarajan. And this creates a very delicious problem for India in the next series, because where will you now fit in Kohli, Vihari, Ishant, Shami, Bumrah, Umesh Yadav, Ashwin, Jadeja, presuming that they are fit. Then another highlight is Rahane's captaincy. Now, we've seen Kohli is a great captain, Kohli is a great player. Ravi Shastri, we've been critical of him, but he's somebody who's a fighter. In fact, I was a fan of his even when he had this khadoos reputation, and he would come out to bat and people would hoot him because he never gives anything away and he's very aggressive. Remember, he hit six sixes in first class cricket as well. So he's very aggressive. So is Kohli. Sometimes you need a balance. You need a factor of calmness. I think this Shastri-Rahane combination worked very well for India in this series. Next, importantly, India never fell on defense. Even in the fourth test match, when a draw would have done for India, India would have kept the border Gavaskar trophy, even with a draw. Even then, the temptation of adding a batsman and going with four bowlers was given up. India went with five bowlers, and as luck would have it, or as poor luck would have it, one of our bowlers got injured. So you can imagine if we had gone with four bowlers instead of five. So that was again good, aggressive, but sensible thinking. So once again, a new attitude on the part of the Indian team management. And finally, two key things. One, you saw this time that Indians showed very little fear of physical injury. Three of the Indians got injured while playing, hit by a fast bowler, essentially by Pat Cummins. That is Umesh Yadav, Mohammad Shami, and Ravindra Jadeja. Three frontline bowlers got hit and fractured their hands. In spite of that, others were willing to take it on their bodies and go on playing. Of that, Pujara stood out because he took the most punishment on his body physically and stood there to tire the fast bowlers out. And for me, a very special highlight, I've had a regret for quite some time now that Indians, when we are traveling overseas, particularly in Australia, England, South Africa, New Zealand, we don't show the ability to last the second new ball. If you see the last three innings of this series, India have shown that new ability to last out the second new ball. In fact, even today's test match was won by batting out against the second new ball.